We are continuing this morning our study in the book of Joshua. Last week we heard about all the battles, all the war, the lightning conquest of all of Canaan. It's one of those things like you watch a dog chasing a car and you say to yourself, wonder what he's going to do when he catches it. Well, here God let the Jewish people storm through the land of Canaan to conquer it utterly. At least the strong cities in it. Now what? So in Joshua 13, we begin the account of now what they did with it after they conquered it. Joshua 13, starting in verse 1. Now Joshua was old and advanced in years when the Lord said to him, you are old and advanced in years, and very much of the land remains to be possessed. Some of the commentators made some issue of that. It's like God's pointing out to Joshua that he's old and advanced in years. Moses was able to last until 120. Joshua was not that old, and God is telling Joshua that he is not going to extend his life as much as he extended the life of Moses, so it was time to set things in order. And one of the things that is left to set things in order is to get the Jewish people established in this land, or to get that plan set out. Verse 2, this is the land that remains, all the regions of the Philistines and all those of the Geshurites. From the Shihor, which is east of Egypt, even as far as the border of Ekron, to the north, it is counted as Canaanite. The five lords of the Philistines, the Gazite, the Ashdodite, the Ashkelonite, the Gittite, the Ekronite, and the Avite. They were on the coast of the Mediterranean, is where the Philistines typically were. The Philistines were sea people. They were probably precursors. They could have been precursors to the Greeks. They could have been from Minoans. It's hard to say exactly who they were, but they had made their inroads. They were counted as Canaanites, but there's a question as to whether their ethnic heritage was Canaanite or not, or whether they were just European peoples that had settled and tried to colonize the land of Canaan. Verse 4, to the south, all the land of the Canaanite and Merah that belongs to the Sidonians, as far as Aphek to the border of the Amorites. And the land of the Gebelite and all of Lebanon toward the east from Baal Gad below Mount Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath. All the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon as far as Misrephoth Maim and all the Sidonians, I will drive them out from before the sons of Israel. Only allot it to Israel for an inheritance as I have commanded you. Now therefore apportion this land for an inheritance to the nine tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh. With the other half-tribe, and this is why it's like, well, nine and a half. Well, wait, oh, I thought there were 12. What happened to the other two and a half tribes? Because you've got... Anyway. Verse 8, with the other half-tribe, the Reubenites and the Gadites received their inheritance, which Moses gave them beyond the Jordan to the east, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave to them. So this is accounting for what happened to the other two and a half tribes. You know, most of them received their inheritance on the east bank of the Jordan, because that was the agreement with Moses. When they were coming to conquer the land, these tribes said, we like this land better, because it's better for our livestock. We're not hill kind of people. This is all flat plains, and we're looking at this and saying, ooh la la, we want this place. So that was apportioned to them. Verse 9, from Araiah, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, the city which is in the middle of the valley, and all the plain of Medeba as far as Deban, and all the city of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who reigned in Heshbon, as far as the border of the sons of Ammon, and Gilead, and the territory of the Geshurites, and Maacathites, and all Mount Hermon, and all Bashan, as far as Salakah, all the kingdom of Og and Bashan, who reigned in Ashtaroth, and in Edrei. He alone was left of the remnant of the Ephraim, for Moses struck them and dispossessed them. The sons of Israel did not dispossess the Geshurites or the Maacathites, for Geshur and Maacath live among Israel until this day. I'm not going to dwell on that this week, but it's something to keep in mind, that if you would look at the whole book of Judges, a lot of the trouble that came to them in the book of Judges were because of these people that they didn't drive out. Verse 14, only to the tribe of Levi he did not give an inheritance. The offerings by fire to the Lord, the God of Israel, are their inheritance as he spoke to them. Okay, that's important, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So Moses gave an inheritance to the tribe of the sons of Reuben according to their families. The territory was from Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, with the city which is in the middle of the valley and all the plain by Medabah, Heshbon and all its cities which are on the plain, Dibon and Bamoth Baal and Beth Baal Ma'on, and Jahaz and Kedemoth and Mepha'ath and Kiriathaim and Sibnah and Zereth Sahar on the hill of the valley, and Beth Peor and the slopes of Pisgah and Beth Yeshimoth, even the cities of the plain, and all the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who reigned in Heshbon, whom Moses struck with the chiefs of Midian, Evi, and Rechem, and Zur, and Hur, and Reba, the princes of Sihon, who lived in the land. Sons of Israel also killed Balaam, the son of Beor, the diviner, with the sword among the rest of their slain. The border of the sons of Reuben was the Jordan. This was the inheritance of the sons of Reuben, according to their families, the cities, and their villages. Moses also gave an inheritance to the tribe of Gad, to the sons of Gad, according to their families. Their territory was Jazer and all the cities of Gilead and half the land of the sons of Ammon, as far as Aroer, which is before Rabbah, from Heshbon as far as Ramoth Mizpeh and Betonim, and from Mahanaim as far as the borders of Debir, and the valley Beth Haram and Beth Nimrah and Sukkot and Zaphon, the rest of the kingdom of Sihon, king of Heshbon, with the Jordan as a border, as far as the lower end of the Sea of Chinnereth, that's the Sea of Galilee today, beyond the Jordan to the east. This is the inheritance of the sons of Gad, according to their families, the cities and their villages. Moses also gave an inheritance to the half-tribe of Manasseh, and it was for the half-tribe of the sons of Manasseh, according to their families. Their territory was from Mahanaim, all Bashan, all the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, all the towns of Yair, which is in Bashan, 60 cities, also half of Gilead, which Astaroth and Edrei, the cities of the kingdom of Og and Bashan, were for the sons of Machir, the son of Manasseh, for half the sons of Machir, according to their families. These are the territories which Moses apportioned for inheritance in the plains of Moab, beyond the Jordan at Jericho to the east. But to the tribe of Levi, Moses did not give an inheritance. The Lord, the God of Israel, is their inheritance, as he had promised to them. Okay. This is going to begin this apportioning of the land. And if you can see this, let's see if this overhead works. It's hard to tell how light it's going to be. I think you can more or less see that. It's also in probably somewhere in the back of your Bible. If you have one of the Bibles from the congregation, I think it's map 3. In my particular Bible, it's map 4. Some of the maps vary from each other. Part of the problem is, although this text gave in excruciating detail how the land was apportioned, we don't necessarily know where these places are today. It's like finding a document that gave the Maryland in terms of the Indian names of places. We may not be certain exactly where those places were. So what we just talked about this morning was on the east bank of the Jordan, Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben. And some places, some maps I've seen have Manasseh being a little bit further south. But that's basically the arrangement. East bank, Manasseh, Gad, Reuben. Manasseh also had a portion on the west bank. So we're going to see that in another chapter or two. We have also up above, we're going to see the allotment. It was generally people like Asher, Zebulun, Issachar, Manasseh, Ephraim up north. And then Benjamin really sits between. Then to the south we have Judah, and Simeon was allotted a portion inside Judah because Simeon was kind of an afterthought, and that actually fulfills something that God had spoken about Simeon and Levi, that they would be scattered among the other tribes. But Judah and Benjamin became the southern kingdom later on after the reign of David, and everything from Ephraim and Dan north became the northern kingdom. And the east bank of the Jordan was lost pretty quickly as far as the territory of Israel. That didn't remain their territory for very, very, very long. Yeah. Some maps, I will get to that when we get to the chapter where Dan's apportioned. I think there's also a little bit of Dan that could be up there. And like I said, some of the maps vary. Like one of the maps I've seen actually has Simeon down the coast and Judah out. So it, part of it is the fact that we don't have necessarily all these places that we can actually say with certainty where these places. We know generally where they were. Like one place has, a map I've seen has Simeon as a defined area inside of Judah. Like I said, another map has it on the coast. So it just varies from place to place. But I wanted to give you an overview because it's kind of hard when you get down into the detail that this passage had. It's easy to get lost in the big picture. This is what the whole map is going to look like when they're done. And it's going to take several chapters to get there in order to finally arrive at this final division of the map. Okay? But right now today, because this is really a summary of what happened during the last chapters of Exodus with Moses allocating that land. And since Levi is going to get a short shrift, they're going to talk a little about the cities of refuge and the Levite cities later on, but I want to talk basically the question and the strategy of why didn't the Levites get any inheritance? I mean, what's the big picture here? Because you think even though they were, you know, priests and ministers to God, you'd think they'd get something. But it all starts back, really, in the book of Genesis, chapter 34, and we won't read all of it because it's a big one, but it's the episode with Shechem. And in Shechem, in Genesis 34, we had Levi. It was the incident with Dinah, who was taken by force, who was raped by the prince of Shechem. And so, as a result, rather than just going and performing vengeance upon the person who did it, Simeon and Levi killed everybody in the city. They wiped the place out, as well as maiming the animals, and it just was a total rout, total destruction. So as a result, when we got to the Genesis 49, like I said, I'm not necessarily going to delve very deeply into any one of these, but when we get to Genesis 49, down in verse 5, when Jacob is giving his prophetic pronouncement on his children. In verse 5 it says, Simeon and Levi are brothers, their swords are implements of violence. Let my sword not enter into their council, let not my glory be united with their assembly, because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And that was what I was mentioning about Simeon. And it came to pass, because Simeon wound up actually being scattered in Judah. So Simeon really lost its identity as a separate tribe or a separate area. And Levi, on the other hand, God used in a special way to his glory. They were dispersed in all of Israel, but they were dispersed because they had a special calling from God. And that was in Numbers chapter 18. Down in verse 20. Then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in their land, nor own any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the sons of Israel. To the sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. Right. The sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting again, only, or they will bear sin and die. Right. Only the Levites shall perform the service of the tent of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and among the sons of Israel they shall have no inheritance. The tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. Therefore I have said concerning them, they shall have no inheritance among the sons of Israel. God said, I'm not giving them a plan B. Levites don't have a plan B. It's God's service or nothing. It's not like if God doesn't work out, they can just farm their land. They didn't have any land to farm. So it's God or nothing. Either they're going to be faithful to God, and the people are going to be faithful to God and give their tithe, or else I guess the Levites are going to starve. Okay, so that was their special calling, was that they would have nothing in the land. So what? Well, then there's us. Then there's us. I don't know of any of us that are even descended from the priests of Israel, although it's possible. But yet, in the book of Revelation, God calls us, and even Revelation chapter 1, so it's right at the beginning, God calls us a, let me get the quote right, Revelation chapter 1 down to verse 4. Actually, verse 4 through 6. John, to the seven churches that are in Asia, grace to you and peace from him who is and who was and who is to come, and from the seven spirits who are before his throne, from Yeshua the Messiah, the faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead, and the ruler of the things of this earth, to him who loves us and released us from our sins by his blood, and he has made us to be a kingdom, priests to his God and Father, to him be the glory and the dominion forever and ever. Amen. A lot of things that went on in the Old Covenant were the physical pictures, the scale models, if you will, or you know, theologically you use it as the word type, of things that were to be revealed in the New Covenant. You have the priesthood in the Old Covenant, and God has written some things about their requirements that sometimes we scratch our heads and say, well, why couldn't he have given them a territory of their own? But it was really to stress to them and to us that the Levites didn't have an inheritance in this world, but they had an inheritance with God. They were scattered among the people of Israel. They had their homes, they had their cities, but they were scattered among there not to make a killing, not to become prosperous and acquire lands and things, but they were scattered among the people of Israel in order to minister. So too in in the New Covenant, in the way we sit with God, he has scattered us among the people of this world. Not that we would carve out kingdoms for ourselves. He hasn't allotted to us great estates in this world. But rather that he has put us here so that we would be his ministers among those who are perishing. It gets frustrating sometimes. Right. And the example I was thinking of for us as believers is, let's pretend that there's a big meeting at the place we work, and everybody's gathered together. The president of the company gets up. He gives the usual boring speech. But afterwards, he starts handing out gifts to people. He calls people up one by one, and there are quite some gifts. I mean, some people get new laptops. Others get dinners at fancy restaurants. One lucky woman even gets a new car. Quite a meeting. Now, you know the president's been talking to you about how valuable you are to the company and how much he enjoys working with you and how he envisions a special role for you, so you're just waiting until your name gets called up. You're imagining what you get going to wind up with, maybe a car or a new house or something off of one of these talk shows on TV, but wait, there's more. One by one, everyone gets up in the front and gets their gift. But then suddenly, thanks everyone, it's over. He walks out. You didn't get anything. Now people are looking at you, like they do at at work when you become damaged merchandise. People look at you like, okay. People start drawing away from you maybe a little bit, and starting to not talking to you quite so much when they leave. So you're crushed, and you rush to the president's office after you're done. He motions you to come in and sit down, and that's a casual stop. Heart-stopping moment because you figure, well, my career is over, that's it, we're done. Once the door is shut, it's all over with. But then he looks at you, he apologizes that he couldn't warn you before the meeting, that everyone else in the meeting was going to lose their job at the end of the day. And these were his parting gifts. He couldn't tell you that. And that he's going to keep you, and you're going to keep your job, to build a new company hand in hand with the president. And that puts things in a little bit different perspective. People around us in the world do very well for themselves sometimes. I mean, I've worked with some really wicked people, and they've generally done pretty well. You know, like, you know, as believers, we're sitting there waiting for the brimstone to come down from heaven and incinerate their houses, and we're just watching. You know, sometimes in offices, you're in your cubicle, you're looking down the hallway saying, okay, is it going to fall today? Is it going to come? Is it going to come? Is God going to take them out today? But they go from bad to worse, doing even more extreme things, and nothing seems to happen to them. Sometimes they do very well. They advance in the company, or they advance in their prosperity, or they advance in their wickedness. You know, they just go from sordid relationship to sordid relationship, or they go from position to position, or every time you talk to them, they're more prosperous and getting more stuff. And sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes it bothers you. It bothered David, King David. It bothered other people. But yet, it speaks to what we're seeing here with the Levites. The Levites might have been tempted to watch all the other tribes getting all this land and all this stuff, and thinking to themselves, oh, look at all this that I can do for myself, and this is a great land, a great territory, and wow, if I had that land, what could I do with it? But that wasn't their inheritance. That wasn't what they were designed for. That wasn't what was for them. God had something greater in mind for them, and that was that intimate service with Him. And that's true with us, too. That we can look at the people around us, and we can say, wow, look at that good stuff. I wish I had some of that good stuff. But God said, look, that's their consolation prizes. Let them have their fun. They enjoy it for now, but there's a time coming when judgment will fall very soon. And all the stuff they got is going to be worthless, absolutely worthless. But as for you, believer, even though in this world you're not getting the stuff that you may think you want, that's still what we do have, is that inheritance, that fellowship with God. We have that special relationship that is worth greater than any fortune that any man alive has ever amassed. Even Solomon at the end of his life, who had amassed a great fortune, in some sense greater than any man today has, because he had the power that went along with it that very few people today have, could say at the end of his life it was all just worthless. You know, the King James term is vanity, and vanity of vanities, but, you know, to put it in modern English, he said it was all just worthless junk. It was all useless. I wasted my time with this. I thought it was going to make me happy. I thought it was going to give me satisfaction, but it didn't. It was all just a waste of time. What matters is to serve God. That's what matters. That's the only thing that gives you satisfaction. That's the only thing that's important. And that's what that inheritance that He has given to us. I mean, the priest got to go into the very presence of God in the temple, the tabernacle. That's what He's given to us. That we can not only dwell into the presence of God, but we bring the presence of God with us in His Spirit. That's just an amazing inheritance that He's given to us. And in the face of that, it doesn't matter what else we see all around us in the world. We see people getting or people acquiring. That's not the point. The biggest danger we have is to fall into their frame of thinking, their value system. When we fall into their value system, the battle of the enemy is halfway done. Because once we fall into their value system and we start chasing the things they chase, then we're off the road. We're off the road. It's like, you know, that we're driving along on the God road, and there's a big lit neon sign saying, "You gotta see this! This is wonderful!" And it's leaning off into the bushes, into the, you know, this gravel road and whatever. And too many people say, "Ooh, neon sign, gotta be good over there. Look at that!" And they turn off the nice paved road and into disaster. The Levites got, in one sense, they got nothing. In another sense, they got everything. Believers nowadays, and a lot of times, seem like we got nothing. But in another sense, we got everything. in a greater sense, we've got everything. As I like to say, a billion years from now, will it matter if you, you know, got that promotion at work, if you, you know, if you got that bigger car or that, you know, all right, let me into, you know, the man's realm of that big screen TV, you know, and does it matter really who won the Super Bowl in a billion years ago? No, it doesn't matter. But that relationship with God is what matters, and to rest in that and to constantly draw back into that perspective to what is important, to what makes sense, to what's going to last. In Hebrews chapter 11 in the faith chapter, it keeps on saying over and over again that they were satisfied with this because they were seeking a country that was not of this world. And that is our inheritance. Our inheritance is not in this broken down, crazy, corrupt, damaged ball of dirt called the earth, but our inheritance rests with God in heaven, and that's a far, far, far greater inheritance than anything that we can imagine nowadays. Let's pray. Dear God and Father, forgive us for craving from time to time, the inheritance of the people around us who are of this world and whose inheritance is just of this world, and not valuing properly the wonderful gifts that you've given to us, the fellowship with you, the opportunity to be part of the work of your kingdom, to always be in your presence, to always walk with your spirit, to really understand what's truly going on in our world. Father, continue to help us to really communicate this hope that's in us to those around that are perishing, that they may see the things they crave for what they are, and instead answer your call to fall into your arms and to truly embrace the great inheritance that you have waiting for them because of the sacrifice and the testimony of our Messiah, Yeshua.